Now available on video cassette.
I've been chasing this guy ever since I joined the force. He has no conscience, and he shows no remorse. He's the mastermind behind numerous bombings and political assassinations. He has a felony list a mile long: murder, arson, kidnapping, terrorism, you name it. He's the most dangerous and brilliant criminal mind I've ever known. For years, I've been watching him, tracking him, studying his every move. I know his every mannerism, facial tic, gesture. I know him better than he knows himself. And now, after all this time, I finally figured out a way to trap him. I will become him.
Friends, and welcome to the most glorious of events, the Movie Mavericks Podcast. This outstanding program is hosted by two fine gentlemen, Jason and Trevor. Now make it so.
MovieMavericks.com.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks Podcast. I'm Jason Rugard. I'm sitting over to Trevor Anderson. He's got a rundown for us.
This is a face.
Oh, see what I did there?
Oh, this is the 25th episode of the Retrospective Podcast series. Can you believe that? We've done 25 of these so far.
It's a struggle.
It's a hell of an accomplishment, my friend. This is actually, though, a first time in a long time we've done a video episode, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, we're going to start go ahead and recording these on video. And so if you're listening to this on the audio podcast, you can hop on over to YouTube, do a little Movie Mavericks searcheroo there, and if you decide maybe you'd like to see us talk in person while we do this, I don't know, personal preferences, I don't know, who knows, right? I mean, Jason's a beautiful man, I mean.
Oh, thank you there, sir. Yeah. You're a handsome bitch yourself. And if you would like to see what we look like, and if you would like to just check out the channel in general,
if you're curious.
Yeah, if you're curious to see, after all these years, what you're dealing with. Here it is. Yes. Hope you like it. So tonight we're talking about Face Off. If you couldn't tell by that intro, it's a very steamy night here. If you see some glistening on either Trevor or I, it's about 100
degrees.
It's very
hot. It's a heat wave here in California right now.
Heat wave is kicking in, but that's actually very, I think, apropos, because this is a summer movie, and this to me is the definition of a big summer movie. In fact, I consider this to be the movie of the summer of 1997. This was my favorite of everything that came
out. And something that I think you would agree is definitely so 90s, even though it's, it's quintessential 90s, really. As far as a summer big movie blockbuster goes, right? It really is. And I don't know about you, but for me, we just played this VHS trailer on this. VHS is where this movie lived for me.
I hated that because the VHS panel scan was fucking terrible.
It's terrible, yeah.
It was a terrible presentation of this movie. Having just watched this on Netflix, which had it all cleaned up in the HD and all that kind of stuff, it's a shame that I saw this on VHS for so long. I did see this in the theater many times. I saw this about 3 or 4 times in the movie theater when this came out. Well, I was enamored with this movie. I know, right? And so then when it came out on VHS, I thought it was an abomination, the presentation of it. You know, even though I remember that VHS cassette like it's a jewel, you know, the way it looked. But when this came out, I thought that this was better than Con Air, which had premiered a few weeks earlier, if I believe. And Con Air holds up a little bit better over time.
I'd say a lot better.
You think so?
Yeah, I am just not a fan of Face Off. As far as John Woo goes, I think this is one of his weakest of the 90s Hollywood flicks.
As important as Tarantino was to the 90s, I think John Woo is equally as important in a lot of ways. Because John Woo visual style was copied for so long until the Bourne Ultimatum.
The thing about the 90s, right? I mean, you mentioned Tarantino, right? Well, here you're mentioning John Woo. We're talking about what people assume today are big Hollywood budget movies, right? They're A movies. They're big Hollywood blockbusters, basically.
Yeah.
These were independent guys that came over in the 90s, right? And John Woo is essentially a part of that as well.
Yeah, and his style was so copied and so everywhere for a while that it watered down when he had movies out. Because to me, this and Mission Impossible 2 are his shining moments, and then everything after that, it just deteriorates. I can stomach Wind Talkers.
I think it deteriorated a little before, but I hate Wind Talkers. I do not like Face Off. I think a lot gets lost in the translation with John Woo, and this is one of the worst offenders, I think, in my opinion. But I do love, Hard Target, Broken Arrow. Even though Broken Arrow is not an amazing movie, it's coherent.
I prefer this way more than Broken Arrow. I think all your issues with these movies, I feel like that was Broken Arrow. Honestly, I thought it boring and like it just takes too long to play out. It's overindulgent.
Oh, God, that's not Face Off to you? That's not the beginning of this movie. First of all, this movie has no emotional basis at all, yet it is a very emotional movie, right? The entire premise that Nicolas Cage kills John Travolta's kid. And that entire scene is a joke. Like, I don't know. I've seen a lot of John Woo movies. He's a great director. But then there are movies like Face Off where it's just nothing, absolutely nothing is directed well. Not one single thing. And it is so poorly directed that you are incapable of putting it together in the edit.
No.
In a coherent story. Am I wrong? I'm totally
sir.
Off.
You are wrong.
I'm not. I am not off.
Let me tell you why you're wrong. First of all, this movie's operatic in its excessiveness and its over-the-topness. You know that right from the beginning when they have the hallelujah and the music and everything is so overly
done. So you feel that? You feel that opening scene, which tacked on. It's
oh,
terrible.
Yeah, it is. I think they shot that. I don't think that was originally in there. I believe that was put in there after the fact because it's so badly done.
Oh, yes.
And even the hallelujah thing when he comes out is odd. But after that 20 minutes of where it goes from a chase of a Humvee versus a plane, a helicopter versus a plane, a shootout, and then fisticuffs, that's an amazing sequence put together.
I just don't care. I
love the Woo touches, like when Cage gets out of the car and those coattails kick up and you get that whooshing sound effect. Those moments are hyper reality in a way. And before the superhero craze, this was kind of the epitome of like a hyper villain. You know what I mean? Like this.
Oh, for sure.
This is strong acting for a summer blockbuster. Very strong acting in this movie.
Yeah, the acting can't be faulted, right? And it's so clear that Travolta and Cage are having an enormous amount of fun, and that pulls over. Like, I get the fun of this movie. What I don't get is the emotional. This movie is so bad, man. Like, it just falls apart for me in exactly the sense that I find it a joke, you know, in every single way. Like, it just doesn't. It's just a joke.
No, it works for me on so many levels. You talk about the emotional connection. There's the scene where the Cage playing Travolta. I'm sorry. When Travolta comes home and he's really Cage inside and he has sex with the wife, right?
Right.
And then it's redeemed because he gets the pleasure of that relationship. But the very next scene is the pain of the relationship, which she makes him go to the child's grave and he has to sit there at the grave of the child that he murdered. I like those balances in this movie. And I actually think it's kind of brilliantly plotted in a lot of ways. I think that the way it's structured.
I think it's way too slow, first of all.
It takes
you say brilliantly
time.
Plotted, but oh my God, is this a slow movie? It takes its time. The first act of this movie is unnecessary.
It's all action.
And it doesn't do anything, but it doesn't set up anything. It just takes time.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think that it
and
does
secondly,
take its time.
Do you think that I want to bring up one scene in particular that I thought was odd, and this it probably has to do with the times and the ratings and whatnot, but certainly the scene where Cage wakes up. Right. In the hospital and takes over the hospital and the jarring shots, insert shots of his face. Right. Completely just missing. Right. No face. Did you not think that was a little like they went through all the trouble to like put on that makeup and stuff just to have like 2 seconds of FaceTime with that? And they were odd angles, too. I noticed. I thought that's got to be for the ratings board. Right.
I think that it was probably that because Woo movies are known to have many problems getting R ratings even because they're so hyper violent. You know, he has to get NC-17 and keep cutting.
But wouldn't it have been better to just not have done that?
But I'll say this, in the movie theater as a kid, I remember when they showed that we were so curious to see what that face looked like, that those glimpses were kind of like the glimpse of the alien or they're like seeing the fin of the shark, you know, you wanted to see it more. And then that payoff was the glasses, you know, the reflection in the glasses.
I will agree that watching it now in 2018, right. you know, 20 years later, that I'm certainly watching through a different veil than 100%. I was, you know, in the 90s. And so I do agree with you on that point. So that actually, that makes a lot of sense to me. You're right.
How much ass grabbing is going on here? How much sexual harassment is going on in this movie? And there's even the sequence
with the daughter and stuff. Oh, what's going to, and I've already seen the movie several times and watching it again, it was like, oh God, is he going
to,
no.
That scene is meant to be played like that. You talk about no emotional connection. You're like, oh my God, is he that much of a piece of shit that he's going to do something with the daughter?
But I can't attribute that to John Woo. I can attribute that to John Travolta.
Okay. In the script too, because that's written. I mean, so nicely plotted.
Anything that saves this movie is Travolta and Cage.
Well, I mean, why does this movie turn into Fortress for about 40 minutes in the high-tech prison?
Well, that's what I'm saying. Why is this movie so slow, right? There's nothing going on, and there's too much going on, right? This movie has no focus at all and it has a great premise, right? And a great idea of, like, just some stupid summer blockbuster movie, and it tries to cram in all these extra things, and it doesn't work. It does a terrible job at it.
I like the extra stuff that it created. Idea that it was an action movie, that it had these sci-fi elements, that in 97, the effect with the ear was kind of cool. The hyper prison, which seems before the high-tech prison we've seen in Fortress, and you see later in Escape Plan and things like that.
Yeah, very 90s.
Very 90s idea. And then the escape of it and the idea that, like, I just thought the plot worked so well because when Cage and when they start interacting, that's first of all, the scene between the two of them in prison is as good as the Heat scene with De Niro and Pacino that everyone lauded. I mean, so I don't understand. You don't think so?
No.
I love that. What? I love that
as
sequence.
As good
in
as
that.
The Heat scene?
For sure. For sure. First of all, are you Team Cage or Team Travolta? Who are you a bigger fan of?
No. Oh, who am I a bigger fan of?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a rough one. In all honesty, it probably split 50-50 between the two of them, but I don't know, because there are times when you think, oh, John Travolta was so good in this movie, and then Nicolas Cage sucked in this movie, but he was so good in this, and then John Travolta was sucked in this movie. You know, like, it's a crisscrossing of amazingness and suckiness all in one, so I can't pick one, but... I mean, anything in the 90s from either one of them, I'll watch. And I don't particularly like this, but I would watch this again. Yeah, I really do think they're fantastic in their heyday in the 90s. Both of them, surprisingly, right, have kind of lost the edge a little bit, the acting edge, haven't they?
They've ended. I mean, I'd say Cage is doing the more interesting
work. But where are they at
now?
I mean, Gotti and right for Travolta, right, which is just tanked absolutely. And Nicolas Cage, his only saving grace is getting picked up by some major movie in some small role, right?
Yeah,
at this point, that's really it. Because otherwise, he's doing straight to streaming stuff.
Well, so is Travolta for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
20 years later, both these actors who were Oscar caliber actors are doing these low budget waste of time in a lot of ways. But at least they're open to working with younger filmmakers. So I'll give them that. I mean, they're not working with
Do they have a choice? I mean, I know
maybe that's a caveat I'm giving away too easily.
I don't know.
It feels like a
Steven Seagal. Alleyway there you're going down, you know, willing to work with anyone. Well, yeah, sure. I mean, pay me the money. I'll show up for 2 days.
When they first get to the Welsh Institute or the Walsh Institute, does it feel like that they're going to visit the lawnmower man? I wanted to know if Job was inside there.
I didn't think of that, but yes, it does. It does.
I think Job's in there.
It's so 90s, the whole thing. I know. I do love it, but... I don't know. Do you think that this movie a little bit skimped on the sci-fi side of things, though? Maybe a little too cheap on the sci-fi things and a little too much on the action?
I feel like they got pigeonholed having to do some sci-fi stuff because they introduced the high-tech surgery. So they have to do
whole premise, right?
Well, they're in a somewhat futuristic world, right? That's kind of what I felt like. They were a few years ahead of us.
Anything that takes place in the 90s always takes place in the present, in a world where everything is possible. We don't know what time period. It's like an alternate universe, right?
Oh, they got internet better than ours.
Always. Yeah, always. Yeah.
They just get on and it's like ready to roll. Passwords aren't needed. It's just ready to go. I love that kind of stuff, right? But yeah, I think that... I got to look at my notes here. My God. There is some macabre elements to this film. Like when he wakes up.
Oh, yeah.
There's some horror film type stuff and the faces. And I like that about it because there's so many genres at play here. that it's kind of a strange. You say it takes too long, but there's like three movies going on. I always forget about the bomb, the subplot with the bomb in L.A., which really isn't all that necessary.
But that's the whole movie.
That's the reason why they switch.
The movie, yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's the plot device to get them to switch. But then right,
it involves the other character. Right, it involves the brother, and it does bring in a lot of the other characters. I guess what I don't understand is all the rest of it outside of the anything that has to do with that basic plot. Like, isn't the rest of it just kind of fodder?
It's John Woo. It's Mr. Woo.
Does he speak English? I have to be honest. Does he have a language barrier? Because most of his American movies seem to miss the, especially in scenes in general, when you take apart a John Woo scene, like, they seem to miss the point of the scene. Am I wrong?
I think it's just, I think you always had an issue with John Woo.
Mission Impossible 2 won me over when I watched that again. All right,
the entire time we were in film school, I had to listen to you talk shit about this movie and Mission Impossible 2, and then one of them won
and
you over.
Windtalkers, which is god awful.
It is. I can't even defend that one. I honestly can't defend that one.
And then we went and saw Paycheck, and who bad talked that movie?
Okay, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to talk about Paycheck. Paycheck's a bad movie. There's evidence of that on our YouTube channel. But don't you think this is a beautifully designed movie in the fact that it's all about two guys marching forward to this moment, and that when they do get there, it is earned, that you do feel like these are the conviction of the characters they're playing, in that they get to both play the good guy and bad guy, but yet we still are rooting for Travolta, but we're really kind of rooting for Cage because he's the good guy for most of the movie.
It's one thing I never understood about this is that dynamic, what you're talking about right now, where Nicolas Cage takes over John Travolta's life. Why isn't he just bad? Why is he good? Why does he pretend to be John Travolta? Why not just...
I'll give you that.
Right, you know what I mean? Like,
why he didn't keep going home?
He literally didn't give a shit before. I mean, at all, right? Did not give a single shit, right? Just being Nicolas Cage, didn't care about anything. So if you become John Travolta, and then people think you're this other guy and stuff, and it really doesn't help him to any great degree to do this. He's still. I mean, is he going to be a good guy now? No, of course not. He wants to be a bad guy. So why doesn't he just be a bad guy and just do whatever the hell he wants? He's free.
That's always weird to me. The same house and that family. Why not just skip
exactly?
Town?
Just go do your thing. Just go set the go. Go get your bomb. You know, go sell it to whoever you're going to sell it to. I'm sure that was, you know, he's clearly crazy, but got to make money. Go be the bad guy. You know, I don't really know what's keeping you from doing that.
Here's a little fun fact about this movie. Do you know that the backslash in the title was put in after the fact? Do you know that? The test audiences this was a movie about hockey. And they figured that putting the backslash in there would not make it a hockey. Face off.
Well, hockey was a lot bigger in the 90s.
Was it, though?
Oh, God, yes. Yeah, right, the hockey was a lot movies. Bigger in the 90s. But, I still would find that strange that anyone would hear face off. Although... But I don't know. I remember the Nintendo games, the hockey games and stuff. It was always face-off. And you'd fight. So I guess.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, maybe. Right.
Strange little movie fact there. This movie made $112 million in 97, which equals about $225 million today. So to put that into perspective, not amazing. It would have outgrossed Justice League, Solo. I mean, some big hits, The Last Pirates and Transformers movies.
You list what's considered bombs nowadays as big hits.
But still,
not amazing,
movies.
But decent, yeah.
I mean, a summertime hit.
Considering this movie would have cost $300 million to make, right?
No, I think it was $70 million, so about $150
million. Oh, please.
Today's money? So not too bad. This was a hit in its day, and it made money.
But who would star in this movie?
Nobody could ever star
today.
In this but these guys.
Who
even then, who could you have gotten?
It's true, because nobody has that. Well, especially Nicolas Cage, right? Because nobody has those mannerisms. Yeah, that you could take and apply, and it would be obvious that you're playing the other person. I agree with you. I think that'd be hard even nowadays.
I can't think of a match.
I mean, Christopher Walken would be someone easy. That could do that, but I don't know. He'd play so well in a movie like this, but.
To have it not come off as doing an impression, but actually being that person. That's right. What the movie does so, very, very well. And I do think it's well directed in some sequences, but I can't tell if that's just because I'm so used to these, you know what I mean? Like, I know the rhythms of them and I see them play out again and I'm like, oh yeah. Although it is overdone with the Somewhere Over the Rainbow sequence during the shootout and the little boy in the room. And I mean, the doves, of course, right. And these kind of tropes that we know.
Right, which have become, yeah, almost a joke for John Woo stuff later on.
But at the time it wasn't. And on the big screen, when I first saw it, it was pretty overwhelmingly, it was just that initial sequence too, with the Humvee going after the plane and he spins out and all that playing chicken. That had my fucking blood going when I was 18 when I saw this. And I mean, honestly, that and Speed were some of like the best were some of the best experiences I've ever had in the movie theater.
Why do you like this movie so much? You're on Speed. Like Face Off.
But yeah, I can't believe I saw it three times. But you know, when you're a teenager, you keep going to the movies because people like hadn't seen it, or you see things a lot. Sure. So that was kind of
longer. So
it did play for like 8-9 weeks in the theater. It was out forever. Yeah, I think it made 245 worldwide back in its time. I put this above The Rock and Con Air. I stack it face off.
You put this above The Rock?
I do.
No, you don't. I do. Really? The Rock is way expertly directed compared to this.
I can't defend it. It's just, you know what I mean? Sometimes it's just an enjoyment value. Movie to watch. The Rock moves in ebbs and flows. And I think that when they first get, you know, up to the point where Connery meets his daughter for the first time, a lot of that's filler. I mean, I know it's a lot of setup and shit.
This whole movie is filler.
I know, but it's a lot of that. I mean, I think The Rock is slow. I really do. I think The Rock is slower than this.
Well, I would flip on that. And you know how
the strange thing is, I think I've seen Con Air the most because it's been on like CMT, TNT.
Oh God, yeah.
You know, that all these channels.
Mad on Turner Network stuff.
It still does. I'm sure. I mean, it was on Sci-Fi the other day. I'm sure they're getting residual checks from that still. I'm sure that pays for one of Nicolas Cage's kids' bail. All right, let me see what else I got here. Let's take a break and listen to Siskel and Ebert rap about Face Off.
But Face Off is not only a psychological thriller. It's directed by John Woo, the Hong Kong specialist in high-powered action, and it has chase scenes by land, by air, and by sea. I think it's a little too long, but I found the plot intriguing, the action inventive, and Cage and Travolta very entertaining as they toy with each other's star personas.
Oh, I liked it too on the basis of the performances more than the action sequences. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed, and we've told the story here, I enjoyed discovering it for myself, I must say, that it kept getting more complicated. Mm-hmm. And as it gets more complicated, it is more intriguing because you do have enough time. It isn't wall-to-wall noise. Mm-hmm. There is time to watch the actors and figure out what they're doing, and that I enjoy.
In all fairness to the viewers, we should say that although it was kind of complicated for me to try to set up those clips and explain them in the movie, after the switch takes place, you just always remember that whoever you're looking at, it really has the other guy inside of him, and then you can keep it straight. Yeah, it sounds more complicated than it is, really.
Okay, yeah. No, I think people figured that out. No good. I'm just surprised that this story hasn't been told before. It's such a good high concept story.
Well, movies like Seconds use some of the same aspects.
A little bit. But the matched pair is what I like.
So I have to agree with Siskel there that I am surprised at this. And although it really technically has been done before, you know, it's just a body swap movie, right? Freaky Friday. It's not really that difficult, but it is a more complex, higher concept than just a straight body swap, which I really do like about this. But I don't know about Ebert's worry that people will be confused by who is who in this movie.
I think Roger may have been hitting the bottle that day. If it was one of his drinking years. I do love listening to them talk about movies, though. Just I always love listening to them kind of kid each other and the whole thing. So moving past that, though, I agree with both things they say. I'm surprised that this took so long to come to the screen, especially if you think that something like this could have been done for Schwarzenegger and Stallone back in the day. Although I think that they would have been too self-aware to kind of to go after the other one as hard as
they and they're not – I mean, weird to say, they're not as subtle as Cage and Travolta, right?
Clearly.
So
I mean, they're not
it would have been a little bit more of a maybe too mocking to have those two do try this.
it may have been caricatures as opposed to characters, you know, that they're actually playing. And we would have felt like they never let go of themselves. And it was, because if you don't feel that way, this movie doesn't work at all at any moment. Mm-hmm. And people that do even dislike this, including yourself, admit that the problem isn't the two actors. Did you notice that in the executive producer credit, Michael Douglas is listed?
Yeah.
How did he get involved with this mess?
I don't know.
what the fuck is that?
What is he doing?
What are you doing here, sir? You don't belong at this party. And did you also notice that Thomas Jane was in this movie?
No, he was in.
You didn't know he was in the prison sequence. He was the guy, the curly hair and the glasses.
I just watched a movie, a brand new movie with Thomas Jane. I didn't even recognize him. So
what in the hell are you watching with Thomas Jane?
Before I Wake or whatever. I don't know, the one with the kid, the dreams, and the dreams become real, with Kate Bosworth. It's on streaming on Netflix.
Oh.
It's not good, but it's not bad for what it is. Well, it's
got Thomas Jane.
But it's got Thomas Jane for like 2 seconds. You know? Well, I didn't recognize him then either, so the hell do I know?
The odd connection, though, is that Thomas Jane eventually married Patricia Arquette, who's Nicolas Cage's ex-wife. Little odd, little meta, weird Eskimo kissing going on. Eskimo brothers. Know. What else we got here? Also, did you notice Joe Bob Briggs as the surgeon in the prison?
Yeah. I mean, no, but now that you say that, yes.
You're your man, Joe Bob Briggs.
Now you say that, yes, I do remember that.
The B-movie driving, which is kind of, once again, apro, because this is really a glorified B-movie. The concept, the execution, in a lot of ways. The fact that this is, but to me, like I said, getting back to my initial point, this is what a summertime action movie was to me in those great 90s summers. You know, when you could have a film like Eraser, Face Off, these things that weren't bigger than life from like a special effects standpoint or a superhero or the consequences, but just because of the execution, they made normal cops seem like they were these bigger than life characters. I mean, it's like a John McClane or a Neo, you know, things like that, where they were just normal characters going through things. I really miss this type of movie making in a lot of ways. I really do. I wish that we had some. I'm going to see Skyscraper, Equalizer, and Mission Impossible this summer just to support those kind of one man on a mission type movies again, because I don't want to just see superhero movies and comedies.
I agree with you. I don't want to see superhero movies and all this. But the interesting thing I think about this is that you have these two careers, Travolta and Cage, you know, crossing over here on Face Off. And if you look at the movies that surround this for either one of them, you know, a couple years difference and you have an Academy Award winner, you know. And you have huge, dramatic performances in a lot of these movies. It just gives you an idea and an appreciation for how big these guys were.
And how balanced their careers were.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Things that were off kilter. I mean, even previously to this, I believe Travolta's previous one was Michael, which is a strange
Michael
movie,
Phenomenon.
Huge hits. He had Mad City.
Of course,
City.
Get Shorty would have been quite a bit before that, but if you look after this, you had things like Primary Colors and as you say, Mad City and Civil Action, of course, not too long after that.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage, you know, surrounding this, you have The Rock, we talked about Leaving Las Vegas, City of Angels, right? Snake Eyes, eight, then you have 8mm bringing out the dead, you know?
Yeah.
So very, just such a huge mixture, kind of a big range of like action movies, comedies, kind of very dramatic roles.
They
balance Face Off right in the middle.
Honestly, something that Cruise used to do to perfection, where he would do the Magnolia and then go do the Mission Impossible and then go do something, the Eyes Wide Shut, and then go back and another Mission Impossible or something big. And it was something that I really admired about his career. He's kind of gotten away from that, and now he seems to be more franchise driven. But that's for another podcast.
Well, that's because he's been bitten, you know.
Yeah.
Twice bitten, a little bit.
He's also, I mean, he's eating the magic beans. The guy looks great for 56, unlike Travolta in Cage, who have not aged well. Who do you think has the worst hairline out of the two? Whose hairline is worse, Cage or Travolta?
I would say Cage, only because I think he shows it off more.
I think he's less afraid of it.
He shows it off more, so you can tell a little bit more that he's losing hair. Whereas Travolta, I don't know, he's kind of got it down a little bit, you know, kind of covers it a little bit.
Oh, goodness. You ever want to see the worst toupee of Travolta's career? Check out I Am Wrath, which is just, the man goes so far as to have wet bangs. Oh. How dare you? Getting out of a pool. It's like a commercial. It stays on in water. So you weren't stoked then that we went back and looked at this.
I was all right with it. I just don't like John Woo. I knew what to expect, so I didn't damage my psyche.
You suggested it
to watch this again. I did suggest it because I wanted to go back and see this because I had changed my mind so much on Mission Impossible 2, and I'm realizing now that I'm just more of a Tom Cruise fan than I've ever been before in my life.
It happens to us all, brother.
Yeah, so. That says now I'm liking Mission Impossible 2, definitely not because of John Woo. I think Cruise had a way more control over that movie and guided that, whereas that just didn't happen with Face Off. And I don't know, all my complaints about John Woo, American John Woo movies, I really do like the Asian John Woo stuff, and it seems to make more sense, and his direction seems to make more sense with what's going on in the movie. So he's not a bad director. I just feel like something. There's something there that's lost in that translation.
Yeah, you've always said that, so you're sticking to your guns on that. And I got to stick to my guns and still say I find this to be an excellent movie. And I put it up there with Mission Impossible 2, of course. I think Mission Impossible 2 hangs together a little, is a little sleeker from start to finish.
Oh, yeah.
Has less dead spots. And I love those two movies as a emblematic of what John Woo was in the late 90s, early 2000s. Hard Target is messy. But I always liked it.
Yeah, but the expectations of Hard Target for me are way less than something like Face Off.
Yeah, I understand.
So I'm fine with, like, if you want to make a low budget, you know, kind of a brawler ish type. I don't know. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Face Off was presented as like a big budget, and it really is a big budget blockbuster film. Yeah, so you'd expect it to not be so rough around the edges.
Yeah, a little bit more polished, and I thought it was. That's why I got so into it when I was younger. And I still think it holds up. Not nearly as well, though, as Con Air
does.
That's
fine. I mean, there's a lot of stuff from the 90s that when you saw it, you thought were super slick, right?
Yeah, Independence Day is one of them.
Oh, Jesus. That's one of those ones where you saw it in the theater and you're like, oh, my God, this is the most amazing movie ever. Believe me, but that one, that faded quick, right? That was the VHS. Yeah, you watch that. You watch that after a year later, you got that VHS. You're like, oh, geez, why did I like this?
I can't even see it. It's like, the fucking frame is like this, you know? Like, I look like I'm just not even widescreen. Yeah. A lot of movies like that. The one that didn't was Speed.
Speed was good no matter what. Yeah.
Yeah. You could not hold that movie back. Point Break's another one. Certain movies played better on VHS and certain ones didn't. I mean, T2 still played on VHS, even though you couldn't see 3/4 of the screen.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to wrap up our podcast for tonight. We want to thank you guys all for joining us on this special video and audio edition of the Movie Mavericks podcast. We'll be back next week with a new episode. We want to thank you all for listening on the new Spotify channel we have. If you haven't checked that, go to Spotify, follow the podcast, get all your latest podcast updates on there. And as always, you can go to moviemavericks.com and get every single podcast we've ever done, as well as iTunes.
Every single one.
Every single one.
I don't recommend going back too far.
Yeah, let's not. If it's not on iTunes or Spotify.
Let's say triple digits, folks.
Yeah, I would. And let's just go last year, okay? Yeah. There's a lot of podcasts out there.
There was this has been several years and a lot of work in the making just to get to this point. It's not even that great. So let's just be honest.
Just to get this show as polished as it's coming to you tonight. Like I say, we want to thank you guys as always. I'm Jason Rugard. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, we are the Movie Mavericks.
Oh my, another magnificent episode has come to an end. If you're craving more, set your destination to moviemavericks.com/warp9. Engage!